Well, hello there. Welcome back to another episode of the Working Mama podcast. This week, I've got a slightly different focus. It's not necessarily about the mum juggle, but it's about the mum juggle and also having and starting your own business. And I'm speaking with Kate Toon. And she's also the first person that I've ever had on this podcast now twice. I hope you enjoy this episode hearing about Kate's journey in building up her business, which may look like an overnight success, but it's an overnight success that's been going for 15 years. As always, if you could leave a rating, a review, that would be, or share it with someone else, that would be amazing. Let's get into it. Welcome to the Working Mama Podcast, a show that provides real-world tips, tricks, and advice to all working mamas on how they can have a career, family, and hopefully one day break the glass ceiling. Welcome, Kate. Welcome back as the very first person to come back on again as a guest of the Working Mama Podcast. How are you going?
I'm good. I feel very honoured. That's quite an honour to be second time around. So thank you for having me. I'm excited. We're doing a back-to-back, people. Karina's coming straight onto my podcast after this. So,
yes, lots of chatting and all things working mum, small business related. So I can't wait to get into it. I've seen your journey even over the last 4 years, Kate, because since we've last spoken, you've written a book and many other things. But those are... For people that don't know Kate Toon, who are you and what's been your background and journey?
Who am I? That's an existential question.
Isn't it?
So I started out as a normal person with a proper job, you know, in advertising and events. And I broke into being a freelancer when I got pregnant, like many people do, just looking for an alternative way of working. Started my own business as a copywriter and then moved into SEO. And now I guess you would call me an entrepreneur. It's a really uncomfortable title to wear, but I make my income largely through passive income. And if you're listening to this, I would be doing air fingers because there's nothing passive about passive income. Memberships, courses, speaking, books, all that kind of thing. So it's been a journey and I'm about 15 years into having my own business.
And I remember you starting your own business. I think it was like you said you're... I remember you saying it was on a train on the way home thinking you were pregnant, thinking, how am I going to do this, be a mom and manage the juggle? And that was the inspiration for your going freelancing, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, look, it wasn't a kind of well thought through plan. I didn't save 3 months of income. I think I was about 5 months pregnant and I didn't think I could get pregnant. So it was a bit of a surprise. About 5 months pregnant, I can't do this anymore. I can't turn up at this very high level advertising job. And I thought, I'm just going to see what I can do on my own. So I just made myself a little website and just did anything and everything. And I'm not going to in any way paint that as a positive. It was really, really hard for the first couple of years, both in terms of making money and trying to juggle having a tiny baby. You know, it was pretty horrendous. People don't talk about how horrendous that first year is. It was horrific. But it did get easier over time. By about year three, I thought, oh yeah, this is working. But it was really hard at first.
Because I was actually only just this week, I was catching up with two friends whilst our kids are playing. We often talk about mum life and working mum life as well. And even we were chatting about, as our eldest are about to start school, we were saying about how we can get that flexibility about we're still wanting a career and also being a mom and juggling also school hours, which I have to say the traditional 9 till 5 does not fit into the 9 till 3:30 box. And one of my good friends was saying, oh, she's thinking of maybe going out on her own and actually doing that as well because she wants that flexibility of being a mom and, you know, the traditional school hours and even school holidays of 4 weeks annual leave doesn't fit into the 12-week school leave that we have. What have you found that journey like of, you know, has the flexibility been there and has what you thought might be, you know, what, as you said, leaving a high paying and, you know, that advertising role to then actually go out on your own? What was that transition like?
Oh gosh, I think there's a lots of pros and cons, you know, so having what I would call a real job, you know, there are a lot of negatives, you know, yeah, you are going to miss school holidays. You're not going to be able to go to stuff during the day. You're going to have to go through the mum guilt of after school or before school care. And all the trickiness around, you know, teacher training days and sick days. It's tricky, right? But what you get on the flip of that is regular guaranteed income, guaranteed sick days, guaranteed holidays, public holidays off. You know, if you've got a flexible boss, you may be able to get some work at home days. There's a lot of security that comes with that compromise, which you don't get when you're working on your own. Because when you're working on your own, it's all on you. Sure, you can pick your kid up at 3, but also you've got to make the money to pay the mortgage. And you still have to deal with sick days and school holidays and teacher training days, because those are days when you should be working on your own business and no one's paying you for those days. So, you know, the real job, you're asking your boss if you can have another day off because your kid is sick. With your own job, you're like, I can take the day off and I'm not going to earn any money today. And that's going to have a knock-on effect. So I think you exchange security for flexibility, and it's sometimes a really uncomfortable exchange.
And how's that been for you? Is it been like, oh my goodness, my son's searching and that, or, but also having a digital business, has that helped you as well, being able to be more online rather than some work that obviously if you're a solopreneur, you maybe just like face-to-face as well?
Yeah. I mean, look, I do everything in my bra and pants in a shed in my back garden, sometimes not even in a bra. So look, you know, I'm a couple of steps away from him and always have been. And that's problematic as well, because, you know, you're like, you're partner is looking after your child and you're like, I'm going to work, but you can hear them crying from where you are and you're like, oh God. And you know, there's phases when your kid only wants you. Look, I'm not going to complain. It's been amazing. I'm so glad that I have been able to do those things. I felt guilty about other things. You know, I think professional women who have real jobs feel guilty about some things. I felt guilty about other things. So I don't know if it's better, it's different. And, you know, I have been able to make money, and more money than I could have ever made as an employee. So that's worked out well, but it's not been without hard work and without a lot of compromise. You know, it's not been easy.
Mm. And so what advice would you give your younger self? So if you had to go back that 15 years and you were 5 months pregnant, what would you say to yourself doing it all over again?
Well, whatever I said, I know I wouldn't listen to.
Yes.
People said things to me and I was like, yeah, you don't know. I mean, the mantra of my book is the world will wait. I don't know why I was in such a hurry to achieve everything. You know, I could have spread that butter over a lot more bread. You know, I was always in a rush and like feeling like I was going to lose out and miss my opportunity. And the truth is, you know, I'm still here 15 years later and things are still happening. So, you know, I probably would have tried to, I spent a lot of time with my son, but I still look back and go, oh, I should have spent more. You always feel like that, I think. So, bit of patience, the world will wait attitude, and also not trying to uphold such a standard. You know, I'm the sort of person who's like, my kitchen must be immaculate. My child must be read Shakespeare. We must have Mozart playing. My business must be perfect. I must make a proper dinner every night. Who was I doing all that for? My kid didn't care. No one else cared. I was just pushing myself with these expectations and exhausting myself, and no one cared. So I'd go back and say that. But as I said, I wouldn't listen. So,
yeah, it's amazing what we tell and things like that. But also even as well, what we think these systems and upholding what we think needs to happen. And it doesn't matter if a kid's had egg on toast for breakfast, lunch and dinner and things like that.
As long as they're alive, you know.
Exactly.
It's, you know, I see lots of people fretting in Facebook groups about, you know, that my kid will only eat this. And, you know, someone said to me, look, they won't be doing that when they're 18. Do you know what I mean? You will get through this. But it's really hard and almost a bit flippant and patronizing to say that to people. Because when you're in it, when you're in that period where your kid isn't eating things or isn't sleeping or is not toilet training or whatever, it's horrendous. And you can't see the light at the end of the tunnel. And so someone's saying, oh, it'll be all right. You're like, well, it isn't, you know.
It's not all right.
That's not helping me right now. Thank you very much. And the same in business, you know. I could sit here and go, you know, it's going to get so much easier and you won't care about that anymore. But when you care about it, you care about it. It's all relative. So yeah, it's hard when you're in the eye of the storm.
Yeah, no, it certainly is. And how have you gone about navigating, as you said before, about the guilt of being with your son? But I know as a small business owner, you never really switch off either, because there's always, you're thinking in the back of your mind. Even yesterday I was at the tennis and I'm going, this is a really good idea for, say, an article or something like that. It's, you kind of never switch off. And I think from a corporate perspective, you can switch off. You leave the, you leave your job, right? Okay, I've switched up the computer, but in small business, it seems to stick with you a little bit more. So how have you navigated that as well between motherhood and also business ownership?
I think you're so right. And I think it's often because small businesses are very much a reflection of ourselves. They are us. It's not a job that we turn up at. It is our identity. So it's very hard to split it up, but you have to try. So I just try and put in the same things that you have as a corporate person, put them into your own business. So, you know, one of the things we miss out on is the third space between being a parent and working. Some, you know, if we have a proper, I'm just going to say real job, Karina, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If we have a real job, you get to often get to commute home, and that little bit of time on the train or in the car or on the bus is time to kind of defrag from the day and get ready to face your family or the other way around. We miss out on that if we work from home or if we're small business owners. So I try and recreate it. So, you know, when my son goes to school, I'll go for a walk around the block and take the dog. So I've got a bit of gap between being a mum and then being a business owner. You know, I do try and work in a separate space so I can shut a door, turn a computer off, you know, commute across my back garden into the house. It's something, a shut door, a different room. You know, when you have your business set up on the kitchen table right next to where dinner's being made, it's very hard. So I try and create division and separation as much as possible. And I also try and be on or off. So my hours to work are 9 till 3-ish. You know, my son's a bit older now, but still I'm in that mentality. I will do nothing, nothing to do with the household in that time. I won't shop. I won't clean. I won't load the dishwasher. I'll do nothing. It is my work time. I save all that stuff for when my son is home so that he visibly sees the load of being a parent. I don't want him to come home and a magic pixie has cleaned up the breakfast dishes. If they're still there, it's because they're still there. And maybe that's partly his responsibility as well. Now he's older to help me with that. So very much try and create that division as much as possible.
And how have you navigated as well school holidays? Have you taken those off or is it still been 9 till 3? It's one of those things.
Care.
Yeah.
I don't care what anyone says. School holidays are just a poo fight. I don't know any business owner who's managed to work out a magical thing. I mean, look, you can put your kid in vacation care. My son never really enjoyed it. You know, you can take the whole time off. Financially, I could never afford it. So I just try and do a split day. So often in the morning, I'd take him out and do something fun with him. And then the exchange would be that in the afternoon, I'd get a couple of hours to do work while he would watch the telly. I mean, when he was very little, that's just impossible. Do you know what I mean? It's just impossible. And maybe you're working in the evenings or before he gets up, although before he gets up, he was getting up at 5 a.m.
So yeah, you need sleep.
Both the work at 2 p.m. So to be honest, school holidays were just an absolute poo fight until he was about 5 or 6 and could self-entertain. And then it would either be I'd work in the morning with a promise of an outing and mum time in the afternoon or the other way around, you know, try and split the day in half, share that with my partner, you know, or promise, like, I think one of the things I talk about in the book is this whole notion of quality time. And in school holidays, there's this feeling that we need to do something of quality. We need to go to the zoo. We need to go do something to the water park. We need to do something dramatic. And I took that pressure off myself and began to realize that all time is quality time.
Mm.
Going to Coles is quality time, or it can be. You don't need to do some big adventure to make it because it's school holidays. Most kids are just tired and want to watch a bit of telly and play some games and that's it. So I took that pressure off myself as well and just tried to have nice little outings, and that was it, really.
Yeah, so helpful. It's amazing how sometimes we think we need to be doing so much with our kids. And I remember when my eldest was particularly quite young, and I was like, oh, I need to put him in like an activity or something on a day off. And then he wasn't really enjoying some of the warm-up activity. He just wanted to get in and do the sport. And I was like, actually, all he wants is really just time with me. So as soon as I stopped doing that activity, he was like, yeah, great. We can just hang out at home and I can play with my Lego. And I'm like, oh, but I've lost that. It was amazing. Once I lost the shackles of I need to do something or I should be doing something. I think should's a swear word for mums.
And also you got to remember, like, you know, going out and facing other humans all day is exhausting as an adult. Imagine how exhausting it is as a child. It's all strange and, you know, new things and you're learning so much. You're just tired. So to come home from that and do 17 activities and then do activities again at the weekend, you know, sometimes you just want to be at home and watch a bit of telly, and there's nothing wrong with that. Do you know what I mean? And I think a lot of us live vicariously through our kids. I wanted to learn piano, but I didn't. So now my son learns piano. and we feel that we want them to be well-rounded individuals who can play an instrument and speak a language and be good at sport. And I wonder how much of it our kids actually genuinely enjoy. They just don't have the voice or even the notion that they can say no. When my son got to 13, he was like, I really don't want to do most of these things. And I let him drop most of them. Mm. He's come back to a few himself. But after a year of not doing anything, he then chose the things he wanted to do. And they weren't the things I thought he would choose. So, you know, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to do stuff with our kids when I think often they don't want to do anything at all.
Yeah, it's funny how sometimes, even on the weekend, my eldest will be like, where are we going today, Mom? And I'm like, I don't know. We might be hanging at home for a bit. And he goes, oh, good. I just want to be at home. And when
out all day,
they're out, yeah, they're exhausted.
Mm-hmm. It is exhausting.
Yeah. And what have you seen some of the challenges? There's obviously a lot of opportunities of having that flexibility, but we don't know, as you said at the start, we often don't talk about the stuff we may not necessarily put out and the hard parts about running your own business. Because even a friend of mine, when she was like, oh, I might do it, I'm like, thinking all the paperwork and the bookwork, and it's not all like, oh, cool, I could go for a coffee whenever I want or long lunches or anything, is it? There is a lot of, you're doing everything. And in a corporate world, you know, there's someone that's the CFO, there's someone that's in HR, but in a small business, you're everything.
Yeah, and your business will eat you alive if you let it, because there's always something to be done, always. You know, your role in your job has clear boundaries and KPIs, and it has a beginning and an end where your responsibility stops and someone else's begins. Not the case in small business. And you can lose yourself to that. So I think the challenges there are, you really need to understand whatever you're going to do, whether it's a store or a service-based business, or, you know, you're going to be a copywriter or a graphic designer, or you're going to make things. You are a small business. That is your product. So you're going to spend 50% doing the thing that you set out to do, and the other 50%, finance, marketing, sales, new business, admin. So if you think as a copywriter, you're going to spend all your time in a cafe with a beret on writing copy, no, you may spend 50% of your time doing that. The rest of the time, you're going to be doing zero, chasing up clients, marketing yourself, writing email marketing, you know. So I think it's really to understand that you are not an artisan. You are a business owner who has a product, whatever it is. And if you're not willing to do the business side of things, the craft or the skill that you have will never succeed.
I think that's a really good thing. So if you are listening and you're thinking about doing it and you've got this expertise and that, think about what it is as well. And there are some markets that are very saturated. So definitely do your research before you're going into it. But it's not as easy. And sometimes, and I think you've actually written this recently on social media, there's no such thing as an overnight success, is there?
No, absolutely not. And, you know, people tell a good story. You know, you go and follow some of the more famous female entrepreneurs in Australia, for example, and it's all glossy and they look great and their kitchens are beautiful and laughing photos with their children. And of course, that's advertising, you know, behind the scenes, they're probably working really hard. And if they're not working long, they're working stressed. No one I know, and I've met a lot of the famous people, has not worked very, very hard to get where they are. And if they haven't worked very, very hard, they either have generational wealth, so they had money to begin with, or they have a very well-off partner and they can make mistakes because they're not the breadwinner. And so you must be aware of other people's privilege. You know, add to that, if they're white, they're middle class, they grew up in Australia, they went to university, and therefore they are a tiny percentage of people. If you don't have those advantages, it's going to be hard. It's not impossible. You can still do it. But don't look at that person without seeing all their privilege at the same time.
Yeah, I think that's such an important reminder. And as you said, you've written a whole book around how to do this, which I think is amazing in itself. And I know that you wrote this in actually a relatively short period of time. I remember watching your stories and your updates on Instagram. I'm like, right, I've written another 5,000 words and the diaries and things like that. So, Kate, when we think about having our own business, it's one of those things as well about giving money to ourselves rather than actually to the man, so to speak. And that's what a lot of people actually go out on their own for. What's been the experience like for you, and has it been as profitable and the like? Because obviously we're getting revenue, but there's also expenses.
There is. And I think, you know, I would class would have classed myself as financially illiterate. You know, I don't think of myself as a numbers person. I think of myself as a word person. It's these stories that we tell ourselves become our reality, right? So I made a lot of financial mistakes in the early years. I got in a lot of debt with the tax office. I kind of trusted accountants and didn't look at my numbers. And I kind of had to learn as I went along. It's really, really important if you're starting your own business to set up a separate bank account. Don't have the money going into your joint account with your partner or anyone else. And then ideally to set up sub accounts where when that money comes in, you then split money off to pay the tax man, to pay GST, to pay yourself and to pay expenses. There's a system called Profit First, which I'm sure you've heard of. It's essentially an envelope system, you know, where 50% of what you earn goes to you, 25% goes to expenses, you know, 20-ish percent goes to tax and GST, and then the rest is profit, you know, the figures you'll find online. And it's really important to think of that because, you know, you make your first $1,000 and you think, yay, I've got $1,000. But it's not yours. You know, A, you've probably had startup costs that you need to pay back. And B, even if you've got a great business, usually only about half of that will be yours to keep. As your business gets bigger and bigger and you become a company or whatever, even less of that will be yours, you know? So I think my first application was Xero, was a finance software. My first hire was an accountant. So before you get your VA or your Canva account or your whatever, sort the money out because everything else can be worked out, but you can't get out of money holes. Do you know what I mean? Like if you get in big money trouble, that's going to be the end of your business. If you don't market perfectly, it's not going to be the end of your business. You know what I mean? Money is the most important thing.
And it's probably as well just on that about charging appropriately as well. Mm-hmm. So it's not just about like maybe what, if you're a consultant, what was your charge out rate at your firm and stuff like that, but actually looking at, yeah, to your point, what are your expenses? What's your revenue? And have a look at that and also charge appropriately. Because isn't there a thing of women do actually undercharge what we're actually worth?
They do. There's a double barrel there because I think first thing people say to me when they leave a job and start their own business is, I want to make enough money to replace my salary. And I'm like, why? Why is that your first goal? Surely you would maybe want to replace 60% of your salary because you don't have to commute anymore. You don't have to wear outfits. You don't have to, you can do whatever you want. You have to exchange some of that money for freedom, right? You know, don't, because otherwise you're going to be setting that as a benchmark and it's a hard benchmark to reach, you know, especially if you're doing really well in your job. So really sit down and I like to tell people to work out what I call their minimal viable income. What's the least money you could make and still pay all your expenses in your personal life? And then what's the least money you could make and pay your expenses in your business life? And don't get into the frippery of business. You know, me, you live in this world as well, Karina. Everyone's having a retreat in Bali and they're going to Miami for someone's mastermind and they've joined every membership under the sun and bought every business book. You don't need any of that to get started. You know, it's a luxury. Personal development is a luxury. If you start your business with just what you know now and maybe one community like Working Mama or mine, you know, that's enough. Don't go buying all the things and thinking it's going to make you any better. It's not. It's probably just going to overwhelm you. So minimal viable income is my message.
There are so many shiny light syndromes around. I've even fallen into that trap recently and I was like, and now I'm sort of unpacking some of that because I'm like, it's not worth it. Yeah. Sometimes simplicity is key. You don't need all the bells and whistles to start with. And
you don't even need them when you're going.
No, like, it's
masterminds and things. They're all great. Like you, sometimes you need someone to keep you accountable and be a voice and whatever. But I do wonder, you know, with certain things, what do you think is going to happen on that retreat? You know, that you've just spent $6,000 on. What do you think someone's going to say to you that's going to be so momentous that it's going to change your business life? Probably nothing. It's just a holiday. And if you accept that it's just a holiday and you can afford a holiday, fantastic. But don't pretend that it's anything other than that. Do you know what I mean? Don't pretend it's going to change your business life because the real changes in business life usually come from head down, bum up, at your computer doing the work, not from some epiphany wearing a kaftan in Bali.
Yeah. Oh, yes. There seems to be at the moment, every second week, there's another retreat that's overseas. And yeah. I have to say, I've seen so many of them recently.
They look great. I mean, that's bitter and jealous, but you know, they are a luxury. And I think especially when you're starting out, it can be easy to look at all of that and go, that's what I want. But really sit down and think, is it? Is it really what you want? Or does it just feeding your ego and that bit of you that thinks that's what having a business is? A lot of business is extremely boring. You know this, Karina. This podcast is glamorous and fun, but guess what's not fun? Editing the podcast.
Yes.
Sending that thing out, remembering to send the questions, getting it on socials, the 8 hours behind every episode that people don't see. And I think this is it. People see the glamorous bit, not all the grubby underbelly.
I know, it's like just, it's like when people contact me about applying to be on the podcast and I'm going, I'm not going to have some random that I don't even know that's going to say the same thing as what I've heard before, particularly people in other countries. And I'm just like, there's like 8 to 10 hours of work that goes in for every podcast episode. Don't waste my time.
It's an honor to be asked on someone's podcast because literally they are investing that time in you. They are introducing you to their audience. It's an absolute honor. And people don't treat it like that. And it annoys me because I'm like, you know, if I've given you all that time, you can at least share a graphic on Instagram.
Exactly.
People don't know, you know, podcasts are a particularly high labor task, aren't they?
So it's
another point, isn't it, with our businesses. You know, we want to be on Instagram. We want to be on LinkedIn. We want to have TikToks and reels and podcasts and books and all the things. But you really have to look at the investment and the return. You know, I love podcasts. They've been the making of my business, but they are not without investment in both terms of money and time.
100%, 100%. So what other tools and advice and tips do you, or not so much tools, but what other tips and advice do you have for people, particularly mums that are maybe thinking, right, I'm sick of the corporate world and the real job, and I actually want to do something for myself that ideally gives me some level of flexibility that I can't always get from the corporate world?
Well, I think buy my book, be the first one, because it's all in there. I think, you know, try if you can to prepare a bit. So get a bit of a buffer of savings. Have a really deep chat with your partner, if you have one, and say, you know, I want you to let me do this. And it's not going to be an overnight success. So can you give me a year to 2 years to see if I can do this? Because the other problem is, you know, partner's like, oh, you just want to stop working and sit at home and watch Real Housewives, which of course we do.
Yeah.
If you've got someone constantly nipping at your toes going, well, how's it going? When are you going to make some money? It's really demoralizing. So I think you have to ask your partner for the space and make the promise maybe that one day you'll retire them and they can come and work in your business. So a bit of prep financially, if you can, a bit of prep in terms of communication with your partner and people around you as well, your friends, because your friends will be like, they'll poo-poo it. They will, because they're jealous. They're super jealous. And then have a bit of faith in yourself. You know, we come into our businesses and we're like, oh, I'm brand new to this. I don't know what I'm doing. But think of all the skills you're taking from, even if you leave your corporate job and you are in finance and you then go and you start making clothes and you're like, well, I'm starting brand new. No, you're not, because you've got all the know-how from your previous job, all the soft skills of building relationships and managing your time and talking to people and being a diplomat and arranging deals. They all come with you. So don't underestimate what you already have and all the skills you already have when you're starting out. So those would be my top tips.
Oh, fantastic. Yes, definitely. The more that you can silence that imposter syndrome and that little annoying voice in the back of your head, that's definitely so amazing things. And what do you think has helped you be so successful for where you are today? Because you would probably underestimate it. But I know that I've seen this multiple times in different Facebook groups of who can recommend like an SEO specialist or a copywriter, your name, I can guarantee, will always come up. And that is not through a lot of hard work, you know, blood, sweat and tears, I'm sure, in the background. What do you think has really helped you in the success of you and grow your business over the last 15 years?
I think the biggest factors would be persistence. So the ability to turn up each day, whether you're feeling good or bad, whether yesterday was a success or a failure, not to the point of pushing yourself when you're really miserable, but turning up relatively consistently for a long time. The reason why people know who I am is just because I'm still here. I've seen so many people come and go in the time that I've just been clinging onto the raft, like Kate Winslet in Titanic. I'm still on the bit of wood, right? So longevity is very underrated. I think in terms of the reasons why I've been successful, I'm quite a driven person, I think, but also I've focused on the money rather than the popularity. I could be a lot more popular if I was a bit more vanilla and a bit more, you know, if I played the game a little bit better. But I've always focused on being rewarding my loyal customers rather than getting new ones and finding inventive ways to make money and looking at the profit. So sure, I could do parties and networking events that I would cover the costs for, but it wouldn't make me any money. So maybe I don't do that. I could run retreats, but I haven't found a way to make them financially viable. So I don't. You know, I think what I could do and what I should do. And then I think about what I want to do and what's going to sell and what's going to make me happy. Because at the end of the day, you've got to enjoy this. Otherwise, you may as well be working for the man. And if you enjoy it, then you can be persistent. And if you think about money, then you will have longevity because you can afford to keep going.
Oh, I think that's such a great reminder and so useful. And lastly, is there anything that we haven't covered? And I know there's a lot, and that's why we should go read your book, but in just relation about how to, you know, have your own business and also be a mum.
I think the final thing I would say is if you're thinking about making the leap or you're just starting out in your own business, you know, don't get too attached to plans. You know, some people are like, well, you have to write a 72-page business plan and you can write that. And the day after you've written it, it will essentially be useless because you really have to learn to roll with the punches as a mum running a business. You know, the sick days, you know, when you're tired, when your kids are tired, you just have to understand that it might not happen overnight. It will happen and it will not go to plan. And if you're too attached to the plan, that will ruin you. So just trying to let go of the plan. And this is something I've learned. I'm a very plan orientated person, but I had to let it go because things just don't go to plan. And that's
Yes, yes. And also sometimes just writing it down, it gets it out of your head, I think, also, which helps. So
it's a good thing to do, but then
don't hold on to it.
Yeah, put it in a folder. Yeah, I love that's you just said the exact phrase that I love. It's great to have a plan, but don't hold on to it too tightly. Most of the best things in my business were shiny objects that other people would have poo-pooed. And if I'd stuck to my plan, I'd have missed them completely. So yeah, have a plan, get it out of your head, but don't get too attached to it.
Yeah. And now, Kate, what do you do for self-care and to, you know, help you in navigating the juggle and so you don't get burnt out?
Gosh, not much. No, I do really enjoy what I do. So I do enjoy my work. I guess, you know, I'm these days I'm a lot better at switching off, walking the dog, pottering around the garden. You know, I have a massage. I try and meditate. It doesn't always work. All the things we hear. But also, I'm not ashamed to say that I love what I do and I get a lot of pleasure out of it. We're shamed if we work hard. We're shamed about that. Like, why are you working so hard? You need to look after yourself. And it's like, I enjoy it. I really enjoy it. I get a lot of my identity, my community from what I do. So yeah, it's a mix. I don't work hard. I don't work too long, but I do very much enjoy it when I do it. So.
And one thing I'd like to also give you kudos for is I've seen your journey over the last 12 months of actually going to the gym and working on your personal health. And I'm like, yes. Kudos to you and hats off to you for doing that and making the time as well.
I'm 50 this year and going through the glorious thing that is menopause. You have to just work. It's really irritating, but you have to work three times as hard to achieve the goals that were easy when we were like 20.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I do try and go to the gym a fair bit as well. It's a good way to get, you know, the dopamine injection.
Fantastic. And now where can people get in contact with you and also buy your book?
Michael. So the book is called Six Figures in School Hours, How to Have a Successful Business and Still Be a Good Parent. And it's available everywhere, online, in all good bookshops, at the airport and via my site. And if you want to find out more about me, my name is Kate Toon, T-O-O-N. If you Google me, you will find me.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Kate, for your insights and wisdom. I'm sure people will get, you know, go buy your book now. And certainly also if you're thinking about making the leap, Kate is a very practical and real and no BS kind of person. So rather than some of those shiny objects, definitely if you're going to buy one, this would be the book to do. So thank you so much, Kate, and look forward to chatting you again, who knows, in the future on the podcast.
Yeah. So guest number 3, and I'll see you on my podcast very soon.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Working Mama podcast. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast catcher. Please also feel free to contact me on any of the Working Mama social channels. Remember, Mama is MUMMA, or website www.workingmama.com.au. I would appreciate you to share this podcast with friends and colleagues, especially those that are parents managing the juggle. And I would really appreciate if you had to take the time out to leave a review of the podcast. Thank you and see you next time. Have a great week.